Sparklers have sparkled, firecrackers have cracked, we've collectively oohed and aahed, and it's time to get on with July. This is the Arts and Culture of West Wisconsin on Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. Al Ross here today. Yasmin is back with a first album in about 7 years. A lot has changed, including the musician, better than ever, I'd wager. She joins us prior to an album release on Friday. Jim Oliver is in the house with what's on stage in West Wisconsin and with special guest Jim Cosmo, author of Monsters in the Hallway, a riveting piece of fiction based on real-life struggles endured as a boy growing up around here. Catherine Rapaz represents Infinity Beverage when talking about what they do and how they do it. Saturday, it's their second annual Northern Roots tasting event, bringing unique businesses together to serve your palates. And before all that, there's this. Raise your hand if you've ever thought it would be fun to try riding a unicycle. I have to admit, my hand is up, and maybe I'll still give it a whirl someday. As a student from Hudson, Shelley Kovacic rides around Menominee and the UW Stout campus on one wheel. And next week, she and her unicycle will be competing on a whole nother level during some international competition near Detroit. That competition caught my eye. Her short YouTube video did the same. And then I knew I just had to talk with her about it. Well, I'm sure that you rode, and maybe still do, a two-wheel bike on occasion, but you decided to do away with one of the wheels back in fourth grade. Tell me about how it all began.
Yeah, so when I was in fourth grade, I went to a private school. One of my teachers, who's also taught French, she is a professional unicycler. She was an international award winner. So she started this elective with the kids and started this class, and there was only so many unicycles. Whoever exceeded got to be in that elective, so I kind of just stuck with it. And then we started our own club about 10 years ago, but she's actually one of the best riders in the world for freestyle unicycling. Mm-hmm. There are different levels. She's one of the very few level 10 riders.
You know, as I was writing my notes for this, I kept using the term bike, but the term bike does not apply because that's short for bicycle, which denotes two wheels. Is there anything short for unicycle? Do you just say uni? What do you say?
Yeah, so in the unicycle world, we'll just say uni. That's what you'll hear a lot. There are actually two-wheeled unicycles. The wheels are on top of each other, so you'd ride backwards to go forwards. But we still call them unicycles because it's only one wheel that has contact with the ground.
Oh, I want to look that up. I want to see somebody riding that.
They're very difficult. There's not too many people who know how to ride those.
So you go one way to go the other.
Exactly, yeah. They're pretty fun.
Now, bicycling is one of those things that kind of just happens. At first, you simply cannot do it, and then suddenly you can. Is it kind of the same with a unicycle?
No, not at all, actually. It took a long time for me to be able to ride. It took me a year to be able to just get up and ride by myself. My little sister actually learned how to ride a unicycle before a bicycle, which is pretty cool. She was very young.
Did that make learning how to ride a bike easier, or was it just a really bad perspective to have?
Yeah, no, I'd say it would make it a lot easier. It's a lot harder for me to ride a bicycle than a unicycle.
Oh, really?
Because I'd probably get on one maybe once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it takes me a little bit of figuring out how the balance works again.
I've read that you say that falling is the only way to learn. The YouTube video I saw, you don't wear any, but I'm sure that you suggest that people wear some padding when they're learning, huh?
It really depends on the type of unicycling that you're doing. I would only suggest wearing a helmet and knee pads and all that if you're doing what we call trials unicycling. So that's just like jumping on obstacles and boxes and things like that. Well, I used to be able to jump down a 5-foot ledge. I haven't done trials style unicycling in a long time, but that's where we would use a helmet and all that. Now in parades, I ride like the 8-foot tall unicycles. We don't require helmets for those. We learn how to fall off of those, and only people who are trained in how to ride them.
We're on the phone with Shelley Kovacic, and she is a unicycler. She rides one of those one-wheel cycles around UW Stout. a business administration major, and she is going to be competing in the not-too-distant future on some pretty cool levels. Now, Shelley, you compete in unicycle hockey. You perform with a group. When did you realize, after learning how to ride a unicycle, that you wanted to take it to even the next level, like a competitive one?
So I started competing in 2009, which was a couple years after I started riding. I just found out about competitions and all that, and I started with a freestyle type unicycling where you put a routine of music and you have these tricks. And then I realized there's so many more things that you can do. So there's high jump and long jump, and there's a lot of different things that I'm really excited for when our competitions are. I'll be doing mountain unicycling and all sorts of different kinds of riding.
Wow, mountain unicycling.
Yep, which you would picture a mountain bicycle except just one wheel. Honestly, I don't think I would be able to mountain bike. I can only mountain unicycle. It's just the balance thing, and I think it's a lot easier because you're not really pulling as much weight, half of a bicycle. So for me, it's a lot easier.
And you're going to a suburb of Detroit for that competition. When is it again?
It is July 8th through the 14th.
That sounds like heavy-duty stuff. So now you said that your mentor, the one who got you interested in it, is a level 10. What kind of level are you on? We should bring out the fact that you are part of the Twin Cities Unicycle Club. What level are you on, and how do you go up levels?
Currently, I am level 7, working on 8, and I've been working on that for probably a few years now. Hmm. It took me about 3 years to learn level 6, so it's really not an easy task to go up through the levels. It's way harder the farther up you go, and there's a specific list of tricks that you have to go through. So level 1, for example, would be just to mount and ride 10 meters by yourself, and then gracefully dismount, and then it progresses from there.
Okay. And the fact that it takes you so long to learn a level and then pass, you are committed.
Yes, thank you. Expert freestyle team, it's required to be level 5 and above to be able to compete with them. Mm-hmm. And we have about 15 to 20 riders, which is a very small group compared to our whole club, which is close to 300.
Wow. Now, there's a short YouTube video of you doing some tricks that I was able to watch, like spinning it under you and reaching down and pushing the wheel with your hands and dropping the seat and just pedaling only a wheel. You've been to international competition. Is it possible to describe on the radio the coolest unicycle stunt that you've ever seen?
The coolest one I've ever seen. Aside from backflip and things like that, there's a trick called the uni whip, and I've only seen a few of my friends able to do it in Canada. But it's where the whole entire unicycle flips around while you're in the air. So basically, you take a big jump, you flip the whole entire unicycle, where the seat would go underneath the wheel and then back up, and then you land on it. One of the craziest tricks I've seen.
I'm trying not to imagine that, because as you're practicing it and you don't do it right, that could be painful.
Falling is the best way to learn, and there have been some pretty bad injuries from that I've seen. You can look on YouTube, too. There's a bunch of famous unicyclers practicing like the really hard tricks, or even way above my level.
You said that there's mountain unicycling. Are there big fat tire unicycles?
Yeah, so mountain unicycles are mostly the thicker tires, and they have a bigger tread, and some of them have brakes. Traditionally, a bigger wheel than you'd see in the freestyle type of riding.
Okay.
So that way you don't have to pedal as much to go as fast.
That's Shelley Kovacic. She's a unicycler at UW Stout. Do you ride a unicycle in the winter?
Yeah, actually, this last winter I was riding around campus on my mountain unicycle. It is a 26-inch wheel. It has a thicker tire to go over the bumps and the snow and all that, which I did find out it's not so good on ice, but the snow is fine. I was going on this big hill, and some students watched me take a big fall. It's pretty funny.
Well, funny for them.
Yeah.
Stout being described, as we all know, as the Polytechnic University, with so many design and gaming and engineering students in your midst. I imagine people of their persuasion coming up with stuff for the unicycle, like schematics on how to do a trick or design challenges. I mean, you could get them to design a unicycle of the future, if you really think about it. Has any of that gone on?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, actually. This last year, I worked with an industrial design major for her senior project building a mountain unicycle. And she did an amazing job. She asked me a ton of questions on how it should operate, what are the best features for this style of riding. And she had me do test rounds on it and a photo shoot and all that. And I was part of her whole senior project, which was really cool to be a part of.
Yeah, no kidding. I have been to motorcycle trials competition, and you've used the word trials a couple times in this conversation. It's kind of the same thing, trying to climb up on things, and you do it very slowly, and it's basically all about balance. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the motorcycle style of trials would look like, but there are a lot of different versions of other sports put into unicycling, like hockey and mountain unicycling, as I said, which is really cool. We do have cyclocross races and track races as well that I will be competing for nationals this year, too.
You unicyclers are not to be outdone, are you?
No, I'm for shows this summer. I've been doing jump roping. The kids seem to like that. I'll have them count the jumps, and then I'll go really fast, and I can't even count. I'm going so fast.
It's kind of a cool perspective to have. I mean, you guys sit back and say, if they can do it on two wheels, we can do it on one.
Right. Anything's possible.
Yes, sir.
And I've seen pretty much everything.
Shelley, thanks for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Fascinating story. Good luck in the competition in Livonia, Michigan. We'll look forward to hearing all about, you know, all the hardware you bring back, the medals and the trophies and all that stuff.
All right. Thanks so much. It was good talking to you.
The new music of Yasmin, Jim Oliver and Guest, and more, all upcoming on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Simply Dunn in Downsville, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery influenced by nature, including tableware, vases, and cooking ware. More at simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, previewing the National Eagle Center's collection of eagles in American culture, ranging from John James Audubon to Andy Warhol, mmam.org. Here's a quick Spectrum memo for you. Summer Cinema is back at UW-Eau Claire on the lawn west of the Haas Fine Arts Center. Activities begin at 8 p.m., and there are lots of them. Movies start around 9. The next movie, July 11th, That Thing You Do. Well, what Infinity Beverages does with its liquid fabrications is not unlike what it does with its events. It mixes things up, and it usually turns out interesting and entertaining. It's known for its spirits and is becoming known for its events, like the second annual Northern Roots tasting event slated for this Saturday. Catherine Rapaz handles marketing, and she stopped by with details.
We have new products for people to try from the spirit side of things and the wine side of things. Mm-hmm. We also have new vendors this year, really just focusing on that Wisconsin-made product.
Good. Since you've taken the time to visit, let's take the time to refresh our audience on Infinity Beverages. What do you make? Where are you located? Go ahead, give it a good plug.
So Infinity Beverages Winery and Distillery is Eau Claire's only winery and distillery. We are located at 3460 Mall Drive. We specialize in making one-of-a-kind products. For example, all of our wines are combination wines, so you might not think that you would see those two varietals of grapes put into a wine together. And then all of our spirits are made from different kinds of mashes or bases that you wouldn't usually expect. So our vodkas are all made from sugar beets and apples. Our whiskeys are actually made from craft beer mash that we distill into whiskey.
Is it all trial and error? I mean, obviously,
yes.
some product gets attempted and doesn't make the cut. But that's got to be the fun part of it.
It's definitely the fun part of it. Definitely trying different things and trying to use different bases for the products and different fruits. Sometimes what happens, though, is if we have a product, say it's starting out as a wine fermentation, if it doesn't actually turn out, the great thing about that is we can actually take a wine fermentation and distill that into a brandy product.
No waste.
So no waste. Yeah, we we definitely always try to make something out of it, even if it doesn't turn out like we initially hoped. Or a lot of times what we'll do too is versus just having the wine be a straight Chardonnay or something, we will actually infuse it with like herbs or different characteristics. So right now, one of our experimental products was a Chardonnay that we actually infused with ginger and then sassafras root. So it's our sassy ginger wine.
Did you try it with ginger first before adding the sassafras root?
We did. And then we also had tried it with saffron, but that really like discolored the wine.
Doesn't look like Chardonnay.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of was like an orange wine. And yeah, just trying new things and trying different ways of making things.
Let's note right here that this whole thing, you and I talking and the whole event, is not just about your business. You're hosting a whole bunch of different enterprises. I want to talk first about the Delectables, and specifically one you spotlighted in the release I saw, which is wine gelato.
We are working with a guy, and he is out of kind of the Marshfield area of Wisconsin, and he was nice enough to make wine gelato for us. So the first one that we tried was with our best-selling Panache wine, and then we also have a oatmeal stout, and we have done that with a vanilla caramel gelato. So there's two different gelatos to try.
Now, there may be somebody out there listening who doesn't know what gelato is.
So gelato is basically cream ice. It's like an ice cream.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like an ice cream.
You'll find it as dessert in some Italian restaurants.
Exactly. So.
Now, you feature, as you said earlier, Wisconsin producers only.
Correct.
You have sweets and salsa, cheese, and more. And another amenity to this second annual event is music.
Yeah, we are so excited to have Kathy Wrights and Seven Swing back again this year. They do a great job. They play a big array of jazz, a lot of songs that a lot of people are familiar with, but some that you probably haven't heard in a long time. And then we also make sure that there's plenty of space because we actually block off part of the parking lot. So there's lots of space to like bring a partner, dance a little if it's not too hot, and sit and enjoy some toe tap and good music.
Catherine Rapaz is with us. She is in marketing and promotions with Infinity Beverages.
The Northern Roots Tasting Event.
It is Saturday, the 7th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Still another feature of your event is the ability to win stuff. Interestingly, I noticed that all you have to do is add an E to win, and you have one of the impressive prizes, which is wine.
That is a very good point.
Yeah, sure.
And the best thing, too, is you get to win some wine, possibly, at this event.
Go.
We are giving away a year's supply of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And a lot of people have been asking, you know,
how
like
much wine is that?
So it's actually based off, like, the average consumption per person in America of wine. So it equates to about 4 bottles of wine a month, about a bottle a week. So obviously some people drink a little bit more than that, and a lot of people drink a lot less than that. But we went for the national average.
You describe the experience as, quote, expanding and exciting your palate.
Correct.
Unquote. Now, those are some heavy promises. You must have a certain confidence in your ability to deliver.
I really do. And I also think that a lot of people aren't as aware of, like, if you pair a certain cheese with a different kind of wine, you are going to get different nuances from both of those products. Trying, you know, maybe our new hopped spirit margarita with some of Becky's olive salsa and seeing how those two things combined enhance the taste of both of them.
All right. Yeah. Now, on the philosophical side, so many of the small hospitality businesses that have cropped and are cropping up are started by people who not only are working to make their lives more interesting and satisfying, but also the lives of those they serve. Talk a little bit about, because you have to rub elbows with them, how important it is for these businesses to interact and how often that's done. We see it happening for events like this. Do they get together regularly and say, you have this, I have this, we could do this?
I definitely think that there is a new sense of the importance of collaboration happening throughout the Eau Claire area. A ton of different businesses are finding different ways to make things happen that we can work together and improve all of our businesses. Everything that we produce and sell at Infinity Beverages is made right there on site. So we really try to, you know, focus on working with different, for example, our relationship with Mike Star Meat here in Eau Claire has really expanded in the past year. He does a whiskey sausage for
us. Yes, I bought some of that.
Yeah, so it's just a great opportunity to see how what we're doing can also improve what someone else is doing, really trying to work together to make a better experience and create more opportunities for people all over the area.
Do you find that people are adventurous?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that we're known for is having so many new products. One new product comes out about every quarter for us, at least, if not more than that. So we have a really great turnaround of people coming in and being like, oh, I haven't tried that yet, or oh, I haven't tried that. or this is new. There's always something different and exciting. So at the end of the day, our goal is to make good tasting product and to educate the public on how that product is made.
The Northern Roots tasting event is this Saturday, the 7th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Do you want to drop names of some of the people who are partnering with this?
Sure, I would love to just quick go through all of them. So our vendors this year are going to be Marika Gouda, Becky's Olive Salsa, Chip Magnet, Mike's Star Market, Ellsworth Creamery is bringing cheese curds, and then, as you mentioned, that wine gelato from the Fun Factory Sweet Shop. And then also, just added on, Winking Owl will be bringing some sweet treats as well. And then our big prizes this year are a year supply of wine, a case of wine for a penny, a wine barrel, tickets for the Bus Brothers tour hop, take people on wine tasting tours. And then our grand prize this year, we're partnering with Cody Limousine for 8 people to get a ride to the tasting lounge for a private production room tasting of all the products and one complimentary beverage. And then they get a ride to Johnny's Steakhouse for a dinner where they'll get a $200 gift card for that. So really making an experience based on things that are here in Eau Claire.
You know, I was alluding to entrepreneurship and all these new businesses. One of the fun things for me is to, when a new business is incorporated, especially people in the spirits business, is how they come up with names. What did you say, Winking Owl?
Yeah.
And if you walk down the wine racks at a large liquor store and look at the names that people come up with, you know, it's not just Ed's Wine. It's
definitely. I mean, and all of our wines also have the fanciful names. So, you know, one of our best sellers is our Zinfandel and Pinot Noir combination wine, but that's called Panache.
Being metropolitan, I say Panache.
Panache.
And I hold my pinky up.
Yeah, but then you also run into the fun thing where sometimes people read it and say, like, Panache. I've actually had people at some of the wine tastings ask me for that pancake wine.
Oh, boy.
So you never know, and we have a fun time naming our products. The newest wine that we have is the Mulberry Wine, and we gave that a fanciful name and call it Mystique. So everything's kind of like a two-syllable fanciful word, but it is fun. It is kind of a process.
Fun.
It's also fun to ask the public, like, what should we name it?
And then, do you do that?
Yeah, we try to.
I don't think pancake's that bad a name.
Yeah, it would make more sense for like a maple-infused spirit.
Well, sure.
For sure. There you are. But I,
Catherine, thanks, and good luck. Have fun Saturday.
Oh, I will. I'll be there all day.
Saturday, Infinity Beverages and Friends, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., the second Northern Roots tasting event. And by the way, there will be a food truck there as well, so you can enhance the experience with some sustenance. InfinityBeverages.com is their website. You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Did you know the Shell Lake Art Center has added a songwriting camp to their always impressive roster of summer art camps? It's July 22nd through 27th. ShellLakeArtCenter.org is their website. Coming up, a selection or two from Nautilus, new music from Yasmin Bowers. But first, this week, Jim Oliver is back in the hammock, reading a good book. Now, if his were a paying job, one could say that he has it made, but he's a WPR volunteer, and so we say hit the hammock or easy chair as often as you can. Here's Mr. Oliver.
In December 1949, life was nearly perfect for Jason Corson until voices told his father to kill the family. The family escaped death, but Jason's father, Peter, was sent to the insane asylum. Well, that's just part of a fictional story written by Jim Cosmo, based on the true life tale of his life growing up in Eau Claire. Jim Cosmo joins us to talk about his book and the issues he faced as the son of a patient in a mental institution and as the victim of a sexual predator. The book is a memoir of sorts. Jim Cosmo, why did you write it as fiction?
Initially, I did write it as a memoir, and then I got thinking, nobody really knows me or cares who I am, I guess. So I kind of thought, well, what do I read? And what I read mostly is a good mystery story. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the way to go, because I was hoping to talk about mental illness and all the challenges and issues that we face, and thought maybe I could get a broader market if I made it just a little more entertaining and interesting. So to lighten things up, I threw in a murder.
Uh-huh.
So, talk about the story. What's it all about?
The murder portion opens up, and it's a Boy Scout found up in McDonough Park, and he's been sexually assaulted and murdered. And he had been at a scout meeting earlier that night with my protagonist, Jason Corson, who's kind of the lead character in this story. Jason's father, when he was 10, was committed to a mental institution. In fact, he's ended up spending 27 years in Madison and Eau Claire hospitals. How he got there, he set the family's home on fire. That part of the story is true. Only the murder is fabricated, but most of the rest of the book, about 80% of it's true. That's what happened to my father. He became schizophrenic. One thing led to another, and apparently his invisible friend one day told him that in order to save us, he needed to kill his family. And so while we were sleeping and before he went to work, he set the house on fire very early one morning. Luckily, my mother, she got up, you know, almost overcome by smoke, and she screamed and yelled at me to get my sister out. And so luckily, I woke up and dragged her out of the house. She was about 3 years old at the time. My sister Sandy, who's also just recently written a book, hers is a children's book. Oh. But anyway, I received an award from the Boy Scouts, a National Boy Scout Life-Saving Award. And so it was at that banquet where I began the fictional part. And I also picked up on the fact that my father had walked away from the mental institution that night because he had heard about this award I was getting. He was there kind of hiding in the back of the crowd, and then he disappeared. Well, I kind of converted that and expanded a little bit when I got into the murder and had him become the primary suspect.
Well, you served in the Air Force, you worked as a newspaper reporter and editor, you worked in public relations, and then you were a riverboat captain. So what got you started as a writer?
I was on a high school newspaper at Memorial High in Eau Claire, and my mother had been a writer, a stringer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. She was raising my sister and I here in Eau Claire in the 50s. Women weren't very welcome in the workplace, but she managed to scrape things out so well that Sandy and I hardly knew we were poor. She also did it with a lot of laughter, you know, once we get by that initial shock of Dad being gone. But anyway, when I went into the Air Force, they threw out the catalog of jobs, you know, military policeman, flight line mechanic, and all this stuff. And then they said information specialist. I said, aha, hey, what's that? You write news releases for, you know, to send to hometowns, and or you might end up working on the base newspaper. I said, stop right there. That's what I want. I walked into the office that first day, and the sergeant looked at me and says, Cosmo, you're the editor of the century. And, oh, my God, what's going on here? He showed me where my desk was, who my two reporters were, and said, you take over Monday. I went home and called Mom and said, help. And she did. I parlayed that into jobs with the Daily Newspaper in Las Vegas and then on to managing editor for a couple of chains.
He is Jim Cosmo, who is author of the book Monsters in the Hallway. Aside from wanting to kill his family at one time, your father comes off in the book as a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, he was a very nice guy. Aside from the mental issues, he became an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So when he was sober, he was a very nice fellow. When he was drunk, he was not always so nice. He never physically abused us, but he was unkind at times. And when he was in the hospital, and I didn't know this till I was writing this story and was able to talk to people who had worked at the hospital in Eau Claire with him, they referred to him as the professor. He was a very bright man, even though he's a factory worker. He read voraciously, and he listened to the radio. And even in the hospital, once he was on his medications, we could have a conversation just like we're having, and he was just fine. But without the medications, he became a different person.
The other side story to this whole thing is the business of being the victim of a sexual predator. You waited 60 years.
Yeah. You know, I did. I buried that in the back of my mind, and I guess that was my coping method. In the book, I refer to it as St. Luke Church. It actually was Redeemer Lutheran, where it happened to me as opposed to my character in the book. And so it was 1952. I was almost 12 years old, and he was the son of a prominent doctor. I was the son of that crazy guy. Mm-hmm. You know, so was I about to tell anybody that when I went over to his house to practice our Indian dance routine, I had no anticipation of what was about to happen to me, and it was horrific. But the mental scars lasted a lot longer than the physical pain, and it kind of changed my life.
Mm. Well, mental illness is blamed for many of the violent incidents in today's society. Do you have any thoughts of what could be handled differently today. There have been a lot of changes over the past couple of decades.
It's amazing. And in some ways, we were doing better back in the 1800s when a nurse, or actually it was a school teacher by the name of Dorothea Dix, came up with this plan to create these centers where they would have no more than 250 patients at the most, and they would be on farms, and they would treat people with comfort and respect. That was before all the medications and all the imprisonment in the enormous facilities they had. The one in Eau Claire wasn't that big. It was about 350. Mm-hmm. But they had facilities around the country where they'd have several thousand patients just stuck in little tiny white rooms, not treated as well as our prisoners are today. But then the government found out back in the 70s that, hey, we can save a lot of money. So they decided to close them down. And that's what actually why my father got out when he was 65. It wasn't that anybody suddenly declared him miraculously healed. It was that the government, Congress and the president decided to shut down the facilities. And so they just started tossing these people out. Luckily, my sister Sandy lived here in Eau Claire and was able to help him out and keep him on track. But a lot of those people ended up sleeping on the streets, under bridges, in nursing homes where they weren't equipped to handle them, and many, many, many are in prison. The problem that we have nowadays is there really is nowhere to go if you need to have someone in a long-term treatment facility. Quite honestly, you know, we can't go back to where we were. We were just throwing everybody into those facilities. There's no question, but there was a lot of people in there who shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who should be. Mm-hmm. And we see these incidents where you've got people who have mental illness. They are a threat to society. But for us at the same time to say that we got to solve this by dealing with the mentally ill, well, quite frankly, there are about 43 million people in this country who have some type of mental illness. The problem is too big to deal with it that way. What we need to do is identify those who are severely mentally ill, and even among those who are a danger to themselves and to others, and institutionalize them.
I guess so many times you read about the people guilty of these shootings. We knew he was mentally ill. We tried to get help for him, but no help was available.
I know people who are in that exact same situation. Even if a person agrees, and nowadays they have to agree, you can't incarcerate someone for mental illness against their wishes. Here are people who don't have the capacity to make good judgment, and we can't put them in hospitals for their own good. But there are some places, Regions Hospital in St. Paul has started a program, and then they're doing a lot of things that Dorothy Dix did back in the early days, and it seems to be working. But there are a few places around the country, but it's very few.
I guess we won't solve that today, but anyway. You also, among other things, work with new authors. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I've helped out with a couple, and I guess retirement is, everybody has their own definition. My wife and I even differ on what retirement's supposed to be. She'd like me to travel more, but she is supportive of what I do. But
okay.
I've helped some other authors, too, and a fellow by the name of John Creasel, who was in the Minnesota National Guard, was injured in Iraq. I actually wrote his book. We just sat down and spent 2 years working together on it, and it's done really well. We just this week are reissuing it, an updated version, talking about what he's done since the book came out in 2008. Then there was another fellow came to me, Mark Weber, who was dying of cancer, and he had been General Petraeus's right hand in Iraq and was about to go to Afghanistan for the same job when they discovered the cancer, and they discovered it was moving rapidly and gave him 6 months to live. Well, we spent a year working on his book, which I named Tell My Sons, the stories and the advice that he was hoping to tell his three boys if he were to live. Uh-huh. Well, he didn't live, but he'd lived long enough to get the book out.
Well, where is your book available, and you have any signings coming up or anything going on?
Yeah, I do. I have a signing at the local store, a Volume 1 store here in Eau Claire and downtown on Tuesday, July 17th from 7 to 9. Huh. And then, of course, it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the other things. And it's available right now in print. We are working on the e-book. Uh-huh. That'll be out sometime.
Okay. Well, the book is Monsters in the Hallway. We've been talking to the author, Jim Cosmo. Thanks so much for coming in to talk to us.
Well, thank you. It's always good to come back to Eau Claire, where I spent so many of my early years.
Thank you, sir. I know summer theater takes a hiatus in many places, but I'll bet something is playing somewhere in western Wisconsin. Before he leaves the studio, here again is Jim with what's playing and where.
Thanks, Al. The Red Barn Theater of Rice Lake will present The Drowsy Chaperone, opening next Wednesday and running through Saturday, July the 21st. The Music Man will be staged by the Great River Road Theater, July the 12th through the 15th, and the 19th through the 22nd in Prescott High School Auditorium. The St. Croix Art Barn of Osceola will present The Boy Next Door next Thursday through Saturday. Always Patsy Cline will be performed July 13th through the 29th on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. as well as Sundays at 2:30 p.m. at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. And the Fantastics will be staged by the Festival Theater through Sunday in the Franklin Square Black Box in St. Croix Falls. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Coming up next, a conversation with Yasmin about her new album on Spectrum West. Hey, support for WPR comes from the Driftless Music Festival, July 14th in Viroqua's Eckhart Park, with Cedral Ballou and the Zydeco Trendsetters, the Nashville sound of Miss Tess and the Talkbacks, and more. DriftlessMusicFestival.com. Spectrum Memo, don't forget the 45th Stockholm Art Fair is going to be held rain or shine in Stockholm, Wisconsin, Saturday, July 21st, 10 to 5, Village Park, stockholmartfair.org. We have a guest next week with all the details you're going to need.
The day begins with a broken heart and the sun beating on your face. There's a dream that lingers and haunts your mind like a shadow is in your place. And who would care if you just pick up and run for the sake of running blind? But you wouldn't do that. Breaking rules just frightens you. In the afternoon is a cup of coffee to brighten the darkening room. Your head still hurts with the list of things that you don't really want to do. And who would care if you smash your coffee cup and scream and shout out loud? But you wouldn't do that. No, you keep those things inside. But now they're starting to burn you.
Yasmin is how she's known to many people. Her last name is Bowers. That might shed some light on her musical pedigree. She's from Washburn, Wisconsin. That's up where things like Big Top, Blue Canvas mean something musical and entertaining. She has a new compilation of songs, and the collection is called Nautilus, like the shell that seems to spiral down infinitely and back again. From the album, that song is called One Woman Alone. And as a writer, that's how she operates. But she surrounds herself with great musicians whenever possible. We had a chat.
The night is fading today as you sit and stare at time growing.
Well, how are you?
I am doing good. Yeah, we're on the road at the moment.
What do people call you for short? Do they call you Yaz?
Yeah, my friends call me Yaz.
Okay,
it's kind of a nickname.
All that Yaz. Have you had fun with your name with albums? And...
That's a good idea. Yes, I've had some ideas, but never followed through with any of them.
Yaz Matez would be good, too.
There you go. So.
Well, let's dive into talking about a few things. The new CD, that's exciting. It's called The Nautilus. The album, I learned, is about love. Six chapters, six phases, lessons you learned. So I have six questions.
Oh, lovely.
You ready?
I like it. Yes.
Okay, so why Nautilus? Why now? It's content, to me, after seeing your interviews and listening to music, is so deeply rooted in human existence that I wonder whether or not it's part of a process you're going through, or possibly maybe process is what all your music is about.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you definitely picked up on it. For me, music is always a process. It's always a way of transmitting what I am feeling and hopefully being able to connect with others through that. And yeah, this particular album came about because of a process that I've been going through. I think we all in life go through phases of times where there's like tremendous growth, and tremendous growth usually comes with tremendous pain. So there's that way of learning from it and growing to the next part of the Nautilus. And I guess that spiral just came to me as I was going through these things as a metaphor for how we grow outwards.
I'm trying not to think about the submarine, but hey, you know, I'm doing okay. I can imagine the shell, and it was easy because you had the shell with you on all those interviews and you set it down. All right, well, so we're talking about processes or processes, whichever is the plural. Let's talk about the writing process. I ask all musicians about that. I think it's about time I did an album, or does one song or one life chapter spawn an album spark? Because albums, as you know, are a big undertaking and not to be taken lightly. They're how you're defined as a musician, ultimately. Time to do an album? Did you have everything you needed to put one together? Tell me that process.
Sure, yeah. Well, for me, it's more a matter... I'm always writing songs.
Okay.
I can't stop writing songs, and I probably have 10 times as many songs as I need for the next 5 albums. That's never a problem for me. However, the act of actually making it into an album is where I think it needs to come together in the right timing, the right collection of songs. And for me, it's been 7 years since my last release. Things have changed. I went to school. I did a lot of stuff. But it felt like it was time. Not only that, I kind of, in going through what I went through in the last couple of years, I was writing constantly. It was after the fact, after going through all that, I looked back and I realized, oh, I wrote an album.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Well, that makes
sense.
Because
they all made sense together, all the songs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Where do you store your songs? I mean, obviously, in today's technology, it's kind of easy.
Yeah, for me, it's my phone. I always sing it into a phone right away or play it, record it. That way I have at least an idea of the melody plus the words.
We're talking with Yasmeen. Her last name is Bowers. You may know that name from Wisconsin Music Annals. The new CD is called The Nautilus. She is a daughter of Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. Let's digress. You grew up in a musical family. T. Bruce Bowers, your dad, Big Top Chautauqua, Blue Canvas Orchestra fame. A lot of good musicians in those groups. He doesn't need an intro. I'm not as familiar with your mom, although I did see her in your interviews, the naughty interviews. I should bring that out because that's kind of clever. Naughty with N-A-U-T-Y, as in short for Nautilus. Your dad's a good fiddle player, extraordinaire, actually. Tell me about your mom.
Yeah, my mom, well, she, for a very long time, was a singer-songwriter as well. That's actually how my parents met. My dad was the producer on her album, and she toured for a lot of years playing guitar and writing songs. But she retired from that about 7 years ago, and she's a writer as well. She wrote for a paper, local paper, for a long time, and now she's freelancing as a journalist, as a writer.
It's all about the chapters we talked about earlier. I did not name them. Before, falling, distance, broken, healing, and after. Those all relate to love. You've said the album is about love. The interviews that you did, was that part of the process?
The interviews came after the album was complete, but I always had the idea of wanting to do something like that, some sort of a video interview. And I think it really comes from that urge to connect with other people's experiences, see what they've learned. You know, everyone has a different life experience, though we have these similar connections. I learned a lot. It was very, very fun.
All right, here comes question number 5.
All right.
Another step back. With all that music around you as you were growing up, was it difficult or was it easy to make your own music? Are you a hybrid of all you heard growing up? Did you need to break out of your shell and be something unique?
Well, I would say that I definitely incorporated all that music that was a part of my childhood and played a lot of music with my parents as well. That was pretty natural, but there was also an urge to step out. And I remember my first instrument when I was 5 years old was actually the violin, the same as my dad. I remember even at that age feeling like, well, I don't want to do the same thing as my dad, so I chose the piano instead. From there, I think probably when I first started listening and studying Cuban music, that was where I kind of found something that was more mine. I mean, not that we didn't share it. We all studied together and practiced, but that was something that it drew me in, and that was like my own little world.
Well, you've already had the hometown release of the album, which was on the 23rd of June. But this Friday in Minneapolis at the Ice House, you have the official release.
Well, it's going to be a great night. So I've got my full band. It's a six-piece band. We have a DJ who's going to be spinning some salsa in between sets. And then after us, a great band, Almandina. They're a South American dance group based out of Minneapolis.
Hmm.
And they play all over the docket. It's very eclectic, but mostly South American dance music, cumbia, salsa, merengue, things like that. And then there will be some dance guests and also some other musical guests performing with me.
You have kind of a, from what I saw on your website, a busy July and August. You're going to be traipsing all over Wisconsin.
Yes, quite a bit, yeah.
All right, so now some of what we've just been discussing was not put in the form of a question purposely,
yeah.
Because here comes question number six.
Okay.
How do we get the album? And well, this is a two-part question. And then what's next? Or is it too early to talk about what's next?
That's very good questions. The easy one is how to get the album. Starting on July 6th, official launch date, it will be all over the internet, iTunes, Spotify, you name it. You can get it online starting that day, also through my website. Also, that day, you can get the physical copies through me, and it will also be available on CD Baby physical copy through there. That's the easy question. And then as far as what's next, busy summer ahead. I am touring with a various combinations, solo, trio, duo, going to Seattle for a little jaunt. That'll be fun, visiting a singer-songwriter friend out there. And then in the fall, going back to Cuba for a month. My producers, who I worked with on this album, live there in Havana.
Okay.
And so I'll be reconnecting with them, talking about this. Due to the complications of internet in Cuba, they have not even heard the finished product of this album. So I need to bring them lots of copies and sit down with them. And then it's going to be a question of touring and working on the next project, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty motivated at this point to just keep the flow with this group of people that I've found. It's pretty special.
Do the musical aggregations that you play with, do they go by just Yasmin, or do they have names? What do they have?
Well, we've been talking about that. Right as of now, yes, Yasmin for all of the promo materials. For example, we played Trempolo, me and my drummer, who's visiting from Havana, Cuba, on vacation for a month, but we're playing a little bit, and we don't have a name as a duo, and I think we need one. We've both been looking at each other like, we can't just be Yasmin. This isn't working.
Well, good luck with that. The CD is called The Nautilus, the artist. Her name is Yasmin. Her last name is Bowers, and that's a big name in Wisconsin, so she can ride in on coattails. Don't blame her for doing that. Thanks so much for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio, and I love the music, and I sure hope you keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Al.
Flowers everywhere, love is in the air. Talking cards and chocolate roses to show her that you care. Buy her pretty things, shiny silver rings, plastic hearts and colored candy and lacy underwear. But there's nothing really there. It seems so strange now. I have changed now, and yet it takes me. When you were mine.
you back to where you are. It seems so strange now. I have changed now, and yet it takes me.
That's Yasmin from her new album called Nautilus. The official release date is Friday. That's tomorrow if you're listening Thursday. Today if you're listening on Friday. Her website is yasmin.com. Yes, it is. Go there. It's fun. That's where the interviews are. We talked about interviews during our conversation. She sat down with a bunch of people and just asked questions. It's pretty cool. She's cool, actually. Hey, let's see. What's going on? Spectrum Memo. Tonight, Thursday, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire features The Nunnery, Idle Empress, and Chamber Noise. Starts at 6. Park Beats, Summer Music Series and Osseo Farmers Markets run Monday evenings through August 27th. Music starts at 6. Next Monday, the 9th, it's Blaine and Leah Howard. Music in the Park in Ladysmith Memorial Park happens every Thursday from 6 to 8. Special guest tonight, if you're listening Thursday, is Dale Martell, one-man band. He's got kind of a cool history. Go up and ask him about it. Colfax Music in the Park tonight, the 5th, if you again are listening on Thursday. It's the music of Rich Schrader and Jim Pesa. 7 p.m., that's in Tower Park, downtown. A big thanks to Dean for help this week and Kate for archiving and keeping us attached socially. Coming up next week here on Spectrum West, among other things, the sounds of Eau Claire are a reality. We'll delve back into that. That's very neat. The big Stockholm Art Fair, we have the official preview. And more, Jim Oliver cooking up a great conversation, I'm sure. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. Thanks. 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 For putting Spectrum West into your day. We'll do it again next week. Enjoy.